Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection. Continuing with Chapter 21, The Gradations of the Supermind, mid-page 819. The second character of the change is that the formation of the thought and will can take place now wholly on the supramental level, and therefore there is initiated an entirely luminous and effective will and knowledge. The light and the power are not indeed complete at the beginning, because the supramental reason is only an elementary formulation of the supermind, and because the mind and other members have yet to be changed into the mold of the supramental nature. The mind, it is true, no longer acts as the apparent originator, formulator, or judge of the thought and will, or anything else, but it still acts as the transmitting channel, and therefore in that degree as a recipient, and to a certain extent an obstructor and qualifier in transmission of the power and light that comes from above. There is a disparateness between the supramental consciousness, in which the Purusha now stands, thinks, and wills, and the mental, vital, and physical consciousness through which he has to effectuate its light and knowledge. He lives and sees with an ideal consciousness, but he has yet in his lower self to make it entirely practical and effective. Otherwise, he can only act with a greater or less spiritual effectiveness through an internal communication with others on the spiritual level and on the higher mental level that is most easily affected by it. But the effect is diminished and is retarded by the inferiority or lack of the integral play of the being. This can only be remedied by the supermind taking hold of and supramentalizing the mental, the vital, and the physical consciousness, transforming them, that is to say, into molds of the supramental nature. This is much more easily done if there has been that yogic preparation of the instruments of the lower nature, of which I have already spoken. Otherwise, there is much difficulty in getting rid of the discord or disparateness between the ideal supramentality and the mental transmitting instruments, the mind channel, the heart, the sense, the nervous, and the physical being. The supramental reason can do the first and a fairly ample, though not the entire work of this transformation. The supramental reason is of the nature of a spiritual, direct, self-luminous, self-acting will and intelligence, not mental, manasa buddhi, but supramental, vijnana buddhi. It acts by the same four powers as the intuitive mind, but these powers are here active in an initial fullness of body, not modified by the mental stuff of the intelligence, not concerned mainly with illumining of the mind, but at work in their own proper manner and for their own native purpose. And of these four, the discrimination here is hardly recognizable as a separate power, but is constantly inherent in the three others, and is their own determination of the scope and relations of their knowledge. There are three elevations in this reason. One, in which the action of what we may call a supramental intuition gives the form and the predominant character. Once in which a rapid supramental inspiration and one in which a large supramental revelation leads and imparts the general character. And each of these raises us to a more concentrated substance and a higher light, sufficiency, and scope of the truth will and the truth knowledge. The work of the supramental reason covers and goes beyond all that is done by the mental reason. but it starts from the other end and has a corresponding operation. The essential truths of self and the spirit and the principle of things are not to the spiritual reason abstract ideas or subtle unsubstantial experiences to which it arrives by a sort of overleaping of limits, but a constant reality and the natural background of all its ideation and experience. It does not, like the mind, arrive at, but discloses directly both the general and total and the particular truths of being and consciousness, of spiritual and other sensation and ananda and of force and action, reality and phenomenon and symbol, actuality and possibility and eventuality, that which is determined and that which determines, and all with the self-luminous evidence. It formulates and arranges the relations of thought and thought, of force and force, of action and action, and of all these with each other, and throws them into a convincing and luminous harmony. It includes the data of sense, but gives to them another meaning in the light of what is behind them, and treats them only as outermost indications. The inner truth is known to a greater sense which it already possesses, and it is not dependent on them alone, even in their own field of objects or limited by their range. It has a spiritual sense and sensation of its own, and it takes and relates to that the data, too, of a sixth sense, the inner mind sense. And it takes also the illuminations and the living symbols and images familiar to the psychic experience and relates these, too, to the truths of the self and spirit. The spiritual reason takes also the emotions and psychic sensations, relates them to their spiritual equivalents, and imparts to them the values of the higher consciousness and ananda from which they derive and are its modifications in an inferior nature, and it corrects their deformations. It takes similarly the movements of the vital being and consciousness and relates them to the movements and imparts to them the significance of the spiritual life of the self and its power of tapas. It takes the physical consciousness, delivers it from its darkness and tamas of inertia, and makes it a responsive recipient and a sensitive instrument of the supramental light and power and ananda. It deals with life and action and knowledge like the mental will and reason, but not starting from matter, life and sense and their data, and relating to them through the idea the truth of higher things. But it starts, on the contrary, from truth of self and spirit, and relates to that through a direct spiritual experience, assuming all other experience as its forms and instruments, the things of mind and soul and life and sense and matter. It commands a far vaster range than the ordinary embodied mind, shut up in the prison of the physical senses, and vaster too than the pure mentality, even when that is free in its own ranges and operates with the aid of the psychical mind and inner senses. And it has that power which the mental will and reason do not possess, because they are not truly self-determined and originally determinative of things, the power of transforming the whole being in all its parts into a harmonious instrument and manifestation of the spirit at the same time. The spiritual reason acts mainly by the representative idea and will in the spirit, though it has a greater and more essential truth as its constant source and supporter and reference. It is, then, a power of light of the Ishwara, but not the very self-power of his immediate presence in the being. It is his Surya Shakti, not his whole Atma Shakti, or Parasva Prakriti, that works in the spiritual reason. The immediate self-power begins its direct operation in the greater supermind, and that takes up all that has hitherto been realized in body, life, and mind, and in the intuitive being, and by the spiritual reason, and shapes all that has been created, all that has been gathered, turned into stuff of experience, and made part of the consciousness, personality, and nature by the mental being, into a highest harmony with the high infinite and universal life of the spirit. The mind can have the touch of the infinite and the universal, and can reflect and even lose itself in them. But the supermind alone can enable the individual to be completely one in action with the universal and transcendent spirit. Here, the one thing that is always and constantly present, that which one has grown to and in which one lives always, is infinite being, and all that is seen, felt, known, existed in as only substance of the one being. It is infinite consciousness, and all that is conscious and acts and moves is seen, felt, received, known, lived in as self-experience and energy of the one being. It is infinite Ananda, and all that feels and is felt is seen and felt and known, received and lived in as forms of the one Ananda. Everything else is only manifestation and circumstance of this one truth of our existence. This is no longer merely the seeing or knowing, but the very condition of the self in all, and all in the self, God in all, and all in God, and all seen as God. And that condition is now not a thing offered to the reflecting, spiritualized mind, but held and lived by an integral, always present, always active realization in the supermental nature. There is thought here, and will and sensation, and everything that belongs to our nature. But it is transfigured and elevated into a higher consciousness. All thought is here seen and experienced as a luminous body of substance, a luminous movement of force, a luminous wave of Ananda of the being. It is not an idea in the void air of mind, but experienced in the reality, and as the light of a reality of the infinite being. The will and impulsions are similarly experienced as a real power and substance of the Sat, the Chit, the Ananda of the Ishvara. All the spiritualized sensation and emotion are experienced as pure molds of the consciousness and Ananda. The physical being itself is experienced as a conscious form, and the vital being is an outpouring of the power and possession of the life of the spirit. The action of the supermind in the development is to manifest and organize this highest consciousness so as to exist and act no longer only in the infinite above with some limited or veiled or lower and deformed manifestations in the individual being and nature, but largely and totally in the individual as a conscious and self-knowing spiritual being, and a living and acting power of the infinite and universal spirit. The character of this action, so far as it can be expressed, may be spoken of more fitly afterwards when we come to speak of the Brahmic consciousness and vision. In the succeeding chapters, we shall only deal with so much of it as concerns the thought, will, and psychic and other experience in the individual nature. At present, all that is necessary to note is that here, too, there is in the field of the thought and the will a triple action. The spiritual reason is lifted and broadened into a greater representative action that formulates to us mainly the actualities of the existence of the self in and around us. There is then a higher interpretive action of the supramental knowledge, a greater scale, less insistent on actualities, that opens out yet greater potentialities in time and space and beyond. And lastly, there's a highest knowledge by identity that is a gate of entrance to the essential self-awareness and the omniscience and omnipotence of the Ishvara. It must not, however, be supposed that these superimposed stages are shut off in experience from each other. I have placed them in what might be a regular order of ascending development for the better possibility of understanding in an intellectual statement. But the infinite, even in the normal mind, breaks through its own veils and across its own dividing lines of descent and ascension, and gives often intimations of itself in one manner or another. And while we are still in the intuitive mentality, the things above open and come to us in irregular visitations, then form as we grow a more frequent and regularized action above it. These anticipations are still more large and frequent the moment we enter on the supramental level. The universal and infinite consciousness can always seize on and surround the mind, and it is when it does so with a certain continuity, frequency, or persistence, that the mind can most easily transform itself into the intuitive mentality, and that again into the supramental movement. Only as we rise, we grow more intimately and integrally into the infinite consciousness, and it becomes more fully our own self and nature. And also, on the other, the lower side of existence, which it might seem would then be not only beneath but quite alien to us. Even when we live in the supramental being, and even when the whole nature has been formed into its mold, that need not cut us off from the knowledge and feeling of others who live in the ordinary nature. The lower, or more limited, may have a difficulty in understanding and feeling the higher. But the higher and less limited can always, if it will, understand and identify itself with the lower nature. The Supreme Ishvara, too, is not aloof from us. He knows, lives in, identifies himself with all, and yet is not subjugated by the reactions or limited in his knowledge, power, and ananda by the limitations of the mind and life and physical being in the universe. End of chapter 21, The Gradations of the Supermind, page 824.